Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Oh, Trojan fans, welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Monday, we got a recap USC's 31-16 loss over the weekend at the hands of the Arizona State Sun Devils. I was there with most of the USCFootball.com crew, and we're going to talk about that, what we saw, with the coach, Harvey Hyde. You can follow him on Twitter, at Coach Harvey Hyde, or go to his website, harveyhyde.com. Coach was tweeting after each quarter during the game what his thoughts were, so we're going to get his thoughts on what he saw out there with the Trojans losing yet another game, falling to 4-5 on the season. And, not looking great for bowl eligibility. Going to have to turn things around here in the last few games. If you have any questions or comments for us, please drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you could call or text us at 424-254-9141. Leave us a text message. We got a text today. We got a bunch of voicemails. Some of them are like 2 minutes long, so we're not going to be able to play them, but I can give you quick recaps on those. But please try to keep those voicemails concise so we can play them on the air. And we also have on the Apple Podcasting app, you can find the Peristyle Podcast. You can follow us there. So we'll always pop, new episodes will just pop up into your feed. It's a really easy way to digest the show. And if you leave us a 5-star rating there, it helps us to grow. All right. Well, let's bring in the coach, Harvey Hyde. Coach, another week, another head-scratching, disappointing loss for the Trojans.
Yes, it was. And the reason why it's disappointing to me, it's not just a L on the side of the record as far as, 4-5 and 3-4 in conference play. It's what you see on the field, and you don't see any improvement, and you just don't see, you see really a mystery. It's a mystery movie. As you're trying to figure out what's going on offense and what the ending's going to be, and on defense, what's going to happen on the defensive side of the football. There's no identity either way. So it's just an air raid crash, I guess I should say, and save the survivors. On the defensive side, I really don't know what to say. They haven't played up to what everyone expected them to play up to. And they have, got to a point where they have three games left in the season. And are they looking for the end of it? Do they really want to go to a bowl game and extend the misery? Do the coaches really want to go to a bowl game where it takes them longer as far as finding coaching jobs and extends their time and efforts on a place that maybe they won't be at? So it's really a mystery on what's going to happen, and you're going to play a team this week in Cal who was beaten by Arizona, who almost did beat USC, but Cal was without many of their players and coaches. So how do you prepare for this? Confusion as far as in the quarterback situation, confusion, injuries, because they were not the hammer, they were the nail. They played a team that was more physical, and the inside game, the trenches. And when the game started, I really wasn't sure what team wanted to win. But as Arizona saw in the fourth quarter and the end of the third quarter that, hey, we can win this thing, let's go and get it done, they certainly did turn it on. So basically, that's the summary of what I saw and where the future is as far as with USC football.
I think that's a great way to put it, Coach, as far as like the fourth quarter. I tweeted out during the game, this looked like two teams that were poorly coached, and it was a one-point game at one point. I mean, ASU turned the ball over three times to USC. They weren't really able to throw the ball all that effectively. It just seemed like both teams were struggling. But then I think that's a great way to put it. At the end, ASU started running the football more and pounded it down USC's throats, a couple of long touchdown drives, and then USC goes 3-and-out, 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 interception. So it was one of the things where, like, ASU was sort of just hanging around. They're like, hey, we can win this game. Let's go win it. And USC just didn't seem to know what to do. I haven't heard anyone put it that way, Coach, but it sounds – I think that makes sense to me.
Well, it is, because that's what we saw. That's what we actually saw. And it was, they were coming – they've lost two games in a row, and USC isn't playing their best. And with all the confusion on what's happening on the offensive side and the defensive side and some of the changes they're trying to make in the offense. And, you know, no one really knows what the answer is. And plays that are successful, they don't run again. And there's just no identity on either side. And as I mentioned, I think the number one thing people are looking for is the story now of who's going to be the next head football coach. I think the players will play for pride, like I said last week, but it's going to be tough to get them up because they're disappointed and they're confused and they don't know which way to go. And they hear one thing and then they do something else. So, you know, the quarterbacks aren't sure where they stand. The running backs, who knows what's happening there? It's just a big question mark. The defensive line is catching, not getting across the line of scrimmage. That's why they're getting blown off the line of scrimmage. And it's just a very difficult situation to watch.
It is difficult. And it's tough for fans. And pretty much everyone's just looking forward to who the next head coach is going to be. It's unfortunate that Dante Williams has had to do this for 10 games. I asked him about it, yesterday, three more games left. And he said, he's hope we have four. So he seems to be hopeful that there's going to be a bowl game. But they got to do some work at that. I did write a column yesterday, Coach, about the two quarterback system. I'm not a big fan. We talked about it in our Tunnel Vision show last night. Again, not a big fan. I don't think that USC is helping itself at all by playing two quarterbacks. It's already a fractioned team, and this seems to just add to that. I wanted to get your thoughts on using two quarterbacks. Maybe some situations it works. I mean, Steve Spurrier was able to do it. He's a great offensive mind. Urban Meyer was able to do it at times. But in general, Coach, especially with an interim head coach that's a defensive guy, I just don't think USC should be playing two quarterbacks.
Well, let me put it to you this way. It's confusing to the kids, and the kids never have an opportunity to get into rhythm, and they don't know why they come out of the game or why they're in the game. They're hot, and they're doing pretty well in the game, and then they're substituted. So it becomes very confusing. They don't know who to look to. I watch them on the sideline. They just follow a coach around trying to get some type of feeling of what's going on. They have no feeling as far as what the plan is. And it's very difficult not to have a plan and make your adjustments off the past series and go back in the game and correct that and, you know, do the things that are necessary as far as the play calling and everything else. So, no, I'm not for that at all. But when you look at it, you've got two different athletes. You've got an athlete, Slovis, who has been there 3 years, has done everything to light it up and followed every one of the coach's instructions as far as what to do with the offense. He's not real mobile, but they don't help him at all as far as trying to put him in a position where he can be successful. So he's getting hit every single play, and now you've got a couple of quarterbacks that are banged up. Can you imagine if just one quarterback was going, they'd be real banged up. And then you've got the other quarterback who's more athletic, and they think he'll work a little bit better in the offense, and that's Jackson Dart. Why? Because he's got better wheels and he's a little bit more physical and he can run around a little bit. And they run for the first time. Slovis runs a keep on an important down and gets first down. Jackson runs a keep and scores a touchdown, but let's don't run it anymore, okay? Because it won't work, and they're worried about, I mean, a quarterback's chances of getting hurt as far as on a keep are far less than getting standing in the pocket and getting nailed from the blind side in the rib cage. Okay. So, you know, I don't understand that. They ran a bootleg one time. I think Slovis was the quarterback, threw a nice bootleg down the sideline, made about 30 yards. So let's don't run it again. Let's try to protect the quarterbacks or do things that make them successful. I think it's very difficult to rotate quarterbacks, especially when they get a rhythm in there. And you've got two kids that are doing their best and trying to be successful. Plus, let's talk about the pressure it puts on each one of them. Every time they go in, they have additional pressure because if I don't do well, I'm going to come out. So you are pushing a little bit more to make plays happen. And sometimes that's not a smart thing to do. So they're competing again. It's like camp again. They're competing in the game against competition for the starting role and who's going to play the most. So, and they're not really sure what's going to happen. So you've got a head football coach who enjoys being the head football coach. Now, don't get me wrong. When I watched Dante Williams, he likes being a head football coach, okay? And that's why he wants that extra bowl game. He wants to have an extra game at being a head football coach, and I can't blame him at all at USC. But right now, you've got to get some organization and identity into that program and decide what's going on. But right now, basically, I don't want to say it's too late, but I think I'm confused and the players are confused where it may be too late.
Yeah, I think, it depends what you're talking about. What is it too late to do? Is it too late to salvage the season? Yeah. I mean, could you feel pretty good about beating UCLA and making it to a bowl game or something? Okay. I mean, I could see that. But it's you had a lot of things that were still on the table when USC was 1-1. Fans were fired up when Clay Helton got fired. And there was a lot of optimism. And, you know, winning that game at Washington State, comeback fashion, Jackson Dart, people are pretty pumped up, and it's really dropped off, Coach. I mean, there was a lot of apathy with Clay Helton in the last few years. It turned around pretty quickly, but then it just kind of went right back down to it. And it's funny. It seems like it's making fans less optimistic about who's going to be the next head coach even, because this isn't going so well. So you feel for Dante Williams. I think he's definitely made some mistakes. If he went back, you know, a couple months and could change some things, certainly would. But it just like USC's been doing, they've hired people that have to learn on the job. Clay Helton learned on the job, made a lot of mistakes. Dante Williams, no choice. You're the interim head coach. You have to learn on the job, but he's certainly made a lot of mistakes as well. The biggest one probably for me is this two quarterback system, but it's you're right, Coach. I don't know. It's too late for what? I guess is the question.
Well, I just think the best thing for the football program is moving on, not delaying it. I mean, why put everybody through the misery of going to a bowl game? Don't get me wrong. A few years ago, if you were 6-6, you had a season that was called firing. That's not very good, especially at USC. I would think somehow you could justify, hey, we don't need to go to a bowl game. We need to give our coaches time to find a new job. We need to get our head coach in here and get his staff organized and start recruiting and evaluate the players that are here and meet with all the players and so on. I mean, there's ways of justifying not going to a bowl game. They did it last year, okay? So this year, you know, sometimes it's in the best interest of the entire football program to say, you know, I think it's better off if we just bury it and put it to bed, let the new coach come in and hire this new coach. And as I said last week, what are you waiting for? It's time to move on. Florida just fired two coaches, their defensive secondary coaches. Somebody else just fired a coach this morning. I don't know who it is. I mean, it's happening. So you've got to be able, and USC had the first opportunity to get out there and talk to people. I don't know what the delay is, and why not go out and do the buyout that you have to do? And, of course, if a coach is coming from another program and you've had the opportunity of talking to him, that university doesn't want him around either because he's going to be gone too. So it's best for both programs, especially in recruiting. So I don't understand what the delay is. And, you know, is there someone really capable at USC? This is the question. Capable in the administration to hire the type of coach that's necessary to bring the tradition back to USC that knows what it was and what it means to the university? Is there? And I think we're certainly going to find out in a hurry.
I think we will, Coach. I want to get to some questions on the game. There are quick little Pac-12 notes I wanted to get your thoughts on real quick. Oregon State, who shut down USC pretty well, they fired their defensive coordinator, Tim Tibisar. They were 1-4 on the road, that only road win being against USC, but they fired their defensive coordinator. Washington ended up firing their offensive coordinator, John Donovan. They were gifted like 9 points to start the Oregon game and really couldn't do much after that. It was a questionable hire to begin with. And then Jimmy Lake, just within the last half hour of us recording this, got suspended for a game without pay because he pushed a player on the sideline. And they did a review over the last 24 hours. So some Pac-12 coaching shakeups, I guess, in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's, damned if you do and damned if you don't. But it's, now it's big money. And, the assistant coaches are the ones that people look to, especially if you're a head football coach. How many staffs did Lou Holt fire at Notre Dame or Brian Kelly at Notre Dame? because it wasn't what they expected, or they weren't having the success that they were having. Clay Helton never did realize, he never did realize to bring people in to USC that were no more than he does in all the areas of coaching. He can be the head coach and be the figure of the program, but he never figured that out. Now, I wonder Georgia State, if he's going to realize that there, or is he going to hire the same people he had with him at USC? I'm just looking to see what his hiring packages will be in philosophy down there. Because believe me, I want you to know, Georgia State, they take football serious down there, okay? They've had great teams down there.
Georgia Southern, yeah.
Georgia Southern, excuse me. You're right. And I'll tell you, they, you know, so I'm interested to see that. And, you know, I'm interested to see what happens now with the coach at USC and currently the situation there, because it's time to move. It's time to make directions, make the new direction on where this program is going, and fire the kids up a little bit. Give them something positive. Because, you know, there's another thing, too. Will Dante Williams really be kept on this staff? I've talked to a lot of head coaches around the country and so on, and a couple of them have told me he'd be the first guy to go. Or am I taking the job? And now you say, now, why would that happen? That's not right. Well, it's because the kids will always go to him rather than come to me. I'm the head football coach because of his association and closeness with the players. And, yes, he's been a great recruiter. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that he should be gone from the staff, but I'm talking to a lot of people out there to find out what their thoughts are. And their thoughts are, yes, it's easy to be a great recruiter at Oregon. It's easy to be a great recruiter at USC. The programs sell themselves. Try to be a great recruiter at New Mexico State or Oregon State or one of these other schools. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening that you don't know what happens in discussions as far as in negotiating with an agent of one of the type of head football coaches you want at USC. But they can be real damn demanding as far as what they want, because they're not going to come there just to come to USC. They're coming there to win, and they want to find out, does USC want to win, or am I just going to be another duck out there?
Yeah. All right, well, let's take, we got a bunch of questions, so we'll get more of your thoughts on this game and what's going on with the program through our listener questions. So back in a minute, and we'll answer those.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, Coach, we are back here on the Peristyle Podcast. We got a couple of really long voicemails we're not going to be able to play because they're too long. So, again, keep them quicker. But DJ, I believe it was, from the Dominican Republic. We love the international questions. He said he didn't even watch the game. No, he has an excuse. He's not even in the country. But he was really curious, Coach, what you think about why Graham Harrell doesn't seem to be able to out-scheme opposing defenses. He wants to see some of the bigger wide receivers on USC's roster get used, some of the tight ends, and figure out ways that you can get those guys the ball and out-scheme a defense. I mean, obviously, USC threw a lot of jump balls to Drake London. He's no longer there. But sometimes they're throwing deep shots to contested, asking the shorter receivers like the Gary Bryants or Taj Washingtons to catch contested balls down the field instead of like some of the bigger wideouts. But what are your thoughts, Coach, on Harrell and not being able to out-scheme opposing defenses?
Well, you know, it's not just the size of the receivers. Let's be honest with you. I said, and you know that, I said it right on this show 3 or 4 years ago, whenever they hired Graham Harrell, that that offense isn't going to work at USC. And you can tell the people, if the people think I'm kidding, go back and pull the tapes out and listen to them. I said, that's not USC. It shouldn't come to USC because that's not the philosophy as far as what you need to do to win at USC. That's what you do at schools where you don't have the number of athletes that USC can get, and you're hoping that you can out-scheme somebody and win by throwing the ball every single down. And that was the philosophy when they came in. Now they've tried to, you know, because of the media and people complaining about the running game and so on, they're trying to implement the running game. But right now, Graham Harrell's confused. If you listen to his post-game interviews, he doesn't even know the questions he's answering or what he's saying. All we need to do is execute better. All we need to do is execute better. All we need to... Hey, it's more than that. It's putting your overall philosophy and schemes of your offense to let it be successful. Let your athletes be successful. It's not only the great athletes, it's what you do with them and how you make it possible for them to be successful. And we've talked about that over and over and over. Like the little things, day one, the little things when he says our philosophy is not to go under center. Now, how can you be so strong to make that type of segment? You better think about it for a moment before you say things like that. So it goes on in their goal line package and the red zone packages and all the things they do as far as it doesn't really complement the game of football on this type of level. So it's not just putting the big receivers in this position and that receivers and so on. It's the overall offensive philosophy of what was there and what's there now, which now there is no philosophy. Absolutely none, because Coach Williams now, Dante Williams, says, I want to run the ball more, and I'm not sure if Graham Harrell knows how to run the ball more, because he's just running the same plays he ran before, but running them more. What anything extra to it, like he did add a bootleg, and he did add two keeps this last game that happened to score one touchdown, and the other one made a first down. So I'm not quite sure that he knows what's actually happening and what he needs to correct. I really don't understand. So to say why it hasn't happened or why they need to have different schemes, you know, last two games ago was London. This game, it's Washington. It's one receiver that they find out. They don't throw the ball really much to other receivers. And you can see the intensity, too, of the receivers starting to change. You can see the excitement, drop balls, things like that. Why? They don't expect to get the football. And when you throw the football to them, they're surprised. And all of a sudden, they have to react to a football, but they're not used to catching a football as much, but they think they're going to go somewhere else with it. You've got to have your receivers all knowing that possibly there's a possibility of them catching a football on every single down. And that's always a doubt with them.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad PJ was able to call in. We also got a voicemail from Joan. We love Joan. Again, it was like 2 minutes long, but she said she turned the game off in the third quarter. So two callers that didn't watch the whole or part of the game. She was yelling at the TV too much. She said they're poorly coached and poorly prepared. But she's really worried about the kids. She's like, the kids are looking for direction and they want the adults to be able to do something about it. And she says it's pathetic. They need to try something new. You got to try to do something different. And hard to argue, Coach. It seems like they do the same thing every week, and they're like, oh, we're going to fix this or try to fix this, and it doesn't get fixed. Are you doing anything different? It just seems like they're kind of going through the motions, and maybe that's all you can do right now with an interim head coach. But what are your thoughts on Joan wanting them to try something new?
Well, it's pretty late to start something new. What you can do is add things to your offense that you already have in place and defense you already have in place, which isn't hard to do. It's very simple. You can do those things to give your kids a better chance as far as being able to be successful. And, you know, will they do that? I don't know. They try it occasionally, but they don't come back to it. If you watch the Arizona team play in the NFL, you know, they had basically the same type of philosophy. But why is that offense successful? Well, they've got a guy, Tyler Murray, that runs around and makes it all happen, and he's another running back, so he scrambles around and he causes so much trouble, and they have the short screens and this and that. Colt McCoy played yesterday, and they have quick screens, and they do different things to balance out the, so that the defense has really a tough time. But you don't see any of that at USC. It is like a complete stiffs. There's a bunch of stiffs playing out there. I feel sorry for the quarterbacks. I really do. How would you like to stand back there and see these guys coming after you that sometimes the offensive line decides to block and sometimes they decide not to block? And when they decide not to block, they have two or three tips on the line of scrimmage where a tackle should be able to get the arms down of a defensive lineman that jumps up in the air by pushing in his chest and throwing him backwards. Well, I don't see that happening, to tip the ball, or being able to throw through holes in the rush, or you know, being able to try to survive back there. It's hard. It's hard to do your reads. They talk about reads when you're laying on your back looking at the moon. So this is why they're throwing to one guy all the time, too, but they can't get all the reads in, and they don't have any help. They don't have any type of screens. They don't run any draws. They don't have any jet sweeps. They don't have any counters. They don't do much of anything. It's a very simple type of offense. And on defense, you know, people just line up and they know they're more physical now in the offensive line, especially when you have a physical offensive line, and you're just going to beat them down. You're going to beat them down. You're going to run at them, run at them, run at them, and that's all you're going to do is run at them, and you're not afraid to run at Drake Jackson or anybody else. And I think Nichols is doing a good job. That cuts down Jackson's ability to rush the passer. And when they do pass, they can throw a little play-action pass. And Daniels, they didn't want to use Daniels. I don't know. I don't know if Daniels was like a different player at Arizona State to me. I mean, when he runs a keep, my gosh, he runs it. He's going to carry it forever. They could run that play all day against USC, but they don't. And I think they've got a different type of offensive philosophy there, too, that it's only one-sided, and I think they've got some problems there because that Daniels has not gotten better, and they didn't utilize him at all the other night, basically. So White's a great running back, so they took advantage of that, and they pounded the defensive line where they're more physical, and the secondary at USC is not playing well at all, and they gave all kinds of penalty opportunities for USC, yet USC didn't take advantage of them. With turnovers, penalties, and everything on their side, they still couldn't score points.
Yeah. All right, let's go to an actual voicemail. Let me play this for you, Coach.
Hello, Coach Hyde. Excuse me, my voice is a little bit messed up. Screaming at the television. Is Corey Foreman injured? I just watched the tape of the Sun Devil game. I just couldn't find him. I noticed Maximus Gibbs is playing quite a bit, actually, and actually not playing all that badly, considering, you know, he's raw, but he looks like he's willing to learn and willing to try. He moves his feet fast, leans forward, makes some penetration towards the enemy backfield, but I think it's a bad sign if you notice Gibbs more than you notice numero zero, meaning Corey Foreman. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the voicemail. We also got a voicemail from Richard, Coach. Same thing, talking about Corey Foreman. And real quick, we asked Vic Soto, the defensive line coach, after the Arizona game about that. He played a few snaps, but didn't play a ton. And Vic Soto said he wasn't in pads all week in practice. And I don't know how many, if he got to practice in pads this past week, He did play some in the Arizona State game, but you know, not every snap. There was some rotation and stuff going on. But get your thoughts on that, Coach. I think for the coaches, if he's not practicing in pads, they're really reluctant to play him. So there's been some of that factor of it where he's just been banged up, it seems like, a little bit all year. And if you're not practicing, they don't want to play you.
Well, that's normally what you do. If a kid's hurt, he can't play, so why dress him? I dress kids that want to play football and find guys that can give me 100%. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, he was the captain of the towel-waving team. This week, there was no towel-waving going on, but they decided that the kids came to USC to play football and not be cheerleaders, okay? So the towel-waving was gone. This kid's got to become tough and grow up. I mean, he's a great player, but he's got to be put in a position where people let him know they expect performance out of him. Then unless he starts performing, you know, he isn't going to play. And I think one thing that discourages him, he's playing behind Drake Jackson in most cases, and not all the time. So, you know, he's playing behind Jackson, and, you know, he feels he's not going to get in the game. So I don't know what type of attitude he has there. But I would have designed a defense that had them both in the game at the same time, personally. And he would have started, and the only way he'd have come out is if he was really hurt. Because the way you find out about how good of a football player you can be is play football, and that's the only way you get better. Now, don't get me wrong. I think this Nichols kid's been playing hard and flying to the football, too. But he could have spelled both guys. He could have been the spell guy, one for Foreman and one for Jackson. But keep your main guys in the football game. Same with the defensive linemen, your secondary guys, the whole package. You know, this isn't an intramural program, like I told you before. This is a major college football program where you get 4 stars and 5 stars that are supposed to perform, and you're supposed to make them a better football player than when they came there. So, you know, this is just some of the things that I see and some of the things I question as far as why would you put both of those great players at the same position? I don't know why you would. I'd want them both on the field and spell them with my best next guy, my third guy. That way, every other series or whatever, they get a rest. And on big downs, I'd have them both in the game on third down situation. So, I don't know. I got a different philosophy. I just think that players win games. Coaches aren't very good without great players. And I think it's great to have great players on the field. You become a better coach.
Yeah, that does make you a better coach when the players play great. All right, Coach, let's go to a email. This is David in Berkeley. David, Trojans coming your way this weekend. I hope David's staying out of quarantine because they seem to like put the whole city under quarantine after someone gets COVID. But David in Berkeley says, I was wondering where you thought this team ranked in terms of the worst USC teams of all time. I'm old enough to remember Ted Tolner and Larry Smith's 3-8 1991 season. That was Larry Smith. It wasn't Ted Tolner, but it was Ted Tolner's at the end of Ted Tolner's players, I guess. He said, never have I seen a USC team get physically dominated by 4 Pac-10/Pac-12 opponents, 3 at home, and lose by more than 2 touchdowns. Even Larry Smith's 1991 team managed to play the national championship Washington Huskies team tough at home. That team suffered 2 Pac-12 blowouts. This is arguably the worst USC team of the past 50 years. Sincerely, David in Berkeley. And I mean, the season's not over, David, so I think we have to wait and see, but I would say it's up there. Coach, any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't like to talk about what's the worst football team. Petros Papadakis takes the claim that he played on the worst team. Maybe that's a good question for our man Petros, but you know, kids are trying. I don't want to ever talk about the worst team, but that includes a lot of good kids that are out there, and it's not necessarily all their fault. So I don't want to necessarily grade or say those type of things. But as far as the Cal game is concerned, if I was USC, maybe Cal wouldn't want to do this. I'd move the game to the Coliseum. There's nobody else playing there. If you want to have a good football game, I'd have them come down here where your players can play and you can get a good football game out of it. Or maybe the possibility of them even canceling the football game up there. So I don't know what the administration could think or if that could happen or not. But to have a good football game where players can play and people can go to the games and everything else, if their county won't allow all of that, then just move the game to Southern California. I don't know. You know, if you look at a couple of years ago, New Mexico, they practiced the entire year and played all their home games in Las Vegas. Hawaii did the same thing. So, you know, you got to look at what is best for your program and what best takes care of your kids. And, of course, the health portion of it is the number one thing. But still, you know, you got to look at how you can have a successful program and where you can get your kids on the field.
Yeah. So as far as, like, standings and stuff, as far, you know, Petros Papadakis said he was the worst, he was the captain of the worst USC football team in history. The reason he says that is because that team in 2000, by, you know, Paul Hackett, when he got fired, they tied for last in the conference. So they were 2-6 in conference. Washington State and Cal were also 2-6. USC had a better record than both those schools. They're 5-7. Washington State was 4-7. California was 3-8. And USC started that season with 3 wins against non-conference teams. They beat number 22 Penn State and East Rutherford, New Jersey, a giant stadium. They beat Colorado in the Coliseum, and they beat San Jose State. And then they just, you know, lost to Oregon State, and they just lost. They lost like 5 in a row at that point. The 3-8 team, ironically, in 1991, also beat Penn State. That was like a number 5 Penn State team, but they lost to Memphis State, I believe. And then they finished a 2-6 record in conference as well. But Oregon State were both 1-7 that year. So Oregon State was 1-10. Oregon and USC were both 3-8. So it was a pretty bad year in the conference. I kind of think that team might have been worse, but man, beating a top 5 team in Penn State was just kind of crazy. But this is the way that USC's been blown out, Coach. If it finishes the season 4-8, I would say this is up there as far as worst teams in USC history. I don't know, but you don't like to talk about that stuff. But
no, I don't like to talk negative about kids.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, David, in Berkeley. We don't know as far as Cal. From what the reports I've read, Coach, it seems like they'll be out of the quarantine. And if you don't know, like, John Wilner has been reporting on this, and we've seen other people, some reporters from the Bay Area. Essentially, what the city of Berkeley has done is they haven't updated their protocols since 2020. So they didn't change things once the vaccine came out. A lot of people... Okay, now you're vaccinated. It's a different kind of protocol. Like you see in the NFL, if you're vaccinated and you test positive, it could be a false positive. And if you're vaccinated, they come back. You know, you can test out of it and stuff. Berkeley, you still can't test out of anything, vaccinated or not. So they've kept their protocols the same for some reason. I'm not sure why, but that's really roped in over 24 players and coaches from Berkeley that wouldn't able to make the trip, including Chase Garbers, the starting quarterback. So Cal looked terrible. At Arizona got their first win in over 2 years. They had a 20-game losing streak. So the COVID protocol certainly contributed there. I feel like the players will be back for this game. Now, there could be other contact tracing and stuff going on, so there might be other players that are out. They might not be able to practice all this week, though. So we'll try to get reports later in the week when we figure that out. Just so people know, that's USC's next opponent. And I feel like the players will be back, but maybe they won't be able to have full practices in. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that one, Coach. Let me just go on.
No, not many thoughts. I just want to ask you a question.
Sure.
You normally ask, what have you heard about Brew McCoy and Keaton Christian?
Oh, yeah. So every time we ask for an update, so Keaton Christian, it was a off field sort of incident, and the same thing, obviously, with Brew McCoy being arrested. No updates there. They haven't given us anything. We haven't heard. I mean, when we heard at the beginning, it just, like, when a player goes into that kind of mode, it's almost impossible for them to come back, at least the way it is around USC right now. So I would think, Coach, would be, if there's something's going to happen, it would be with the new coach in the off season. I don't think you're going to see anything updated.
Are they in school, both in school?
I don't know about Kristen. Brew McCoy was the last I heard. He was back in school.
All right, man. When something happens to a player like that, like Paul Brewmeister, was that the place kicker where, you know, he just disappeared? You never heard about him. These guys disappeared. They're probably at Guantanamo Bay. I'm not quite sure where USC puts them. But, man, I tell you what, I'd certainly support these kids. I mean, kids make mistakes and so on. But that you never hear about them again. They just more or less just disappear. You know, they fade into the sunlight.
Yeah, Matt Bormeister was the kicker, the savior of the Rose Bowl.
What was his name?
Matt Bormeister.
Yeah. Remember that? He just disappeared.
He was the savior of the Rose Bowl. That's the last time USC won a bowl game, Coach. 2016 season. So, you know, making a bowl and winning one would be a big deal because they haven't done, you know, haven't won a bowl game since the 2016 season, you know, the 2017 Rose Bowl.
Well, I don't know if they'd win one this year.
Yeah,
but,
fair.
But the point of it is, you know, I gave my reasons about the bowl game earlier, you know.
We got a text from Jarrett in San Clemente, and he said, "Hey, team, in respects to staying competitive, at 4-5, should developmental play be a bigger factor in deciding playing time roster-wide? Obviously, Jackson Dart inspires the question, but if we're going to be a bad defense, at least blame it on freshman mistakes. We have seen the entire, like, safety group, young, old, whatever, been rotating in. Isaiah Polamalu, the team captain, didn't even start in this game, but they all played. They all played a bunch of snaps. You saw guys like Xavier Alford get a couple of picks in the game. I think there's some spots, Coach, where they are rotating guys, but what are your thoughts on development instead of, I guess, trying to win or trying to play your best guys?
Well, if I was coming back and I was a football coach and I'm going to come back, then I want to develop my players, of course, but, you know, being that this staff isn't coming back, I think it's more important to them to try to win. But I have seen that happen as far as them playing more younger kids, especially in the secondary, as you mentioned. And, you know, Malapiai, the captain on the offensive side of the football, has been limited, and I don't see where he's that much different than anybody else. Now, don't get me wrong, not that Ingram had a couple of games, good games, but, you know, he's a leader, and he's paid his dues at USC, so, you know, that's got to be worth something in the cookie jar. And, you know, I think that you owe loyalty to your players, and I think if it's equal, you know, I think that if they're returning players and the other kids are freshmen and so on, I would probably play the older players with this type of season. But again, you know, if you're a coach, see, probably Coach Dante Williams feels he's going to be back, so he wants to give a lot of his, and I assume he will be, don't get me wrong, will want to get a lot of his younger players' experience. And I think that's what they're doing as far as the secondary part of it. They don't have it in the other positions as far as getting a lot of freshman players in.
No, and then, you know, we've seen some injuries on the offensive line. We're not seeing much rotation there. They had like seven guys they liked, and they're pretty much playing those guys. So we'll see. We'll see what
they need to do. What they need to do this year, Ryan, is recruit more receivers. Because I think they don't have enough receivers, that they don't know who to play. They've got so many receivers, and they've got other great receivers like John Jackson and the other Jackson kid and all these kids. What if McCoy was still on the team and still out there? And they got so many receivers and tight ends that they're not balanced out on their other positions as far as scholarships.
Yeah, and they haven't been able to really figure out what's going on at the receiver position.
No, they take Nixon – and they give him a $70,000 scholarship, and he catches three punts a game.
Yeah, that's I thought he could have a bigger impact for sure, and we're not seeing.
Well, you got to learn how to evaluate players.
Yeah.
And see what you have rather than bring in a senior when you have younger players that are just as good.
Yep. I hear you.
I mean, I don't mean to throw this stuff out. Nothing gets a kid, but I don't think it's right for the kid either because he took the scholarship and he was smart to get it. You know, these are the type of things that are happening that I say, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, if he stayed at Colorado, he would have been more involved in the offense than
sure
he is
have.
Here. Yeah, so you feel bad for him, too, because it's just not
working.
Mark in the Inland Empire wrote in. He said, Coach, I need help here. If they get the right guy for the job, do you think he can win with the roster right away, or do you think that 3 or 4 years down the road is the ticket? I actually thought all the way up to the third quarter that they could actually have won this game. I was with you there, Mark. If it weren't really for that untimely penalty, which gave them first down, and they had scored right away. The two-party quarterback disaster didn't help. Also agree with you there. So I don't think that a good coach with discipline and being able to coach these guys could win right away. I hope to hear your thoughts, Coach. We are still USC. Mark from the IE.
Well, I think you'd have to have some great recruiting years, and you'd have to get some key players in key areas. I think both the quarterbacks, as far as can win with a decent, they can be a Matt Leinart type of offense that they had with Pete Carroll, where they had Lendell White and Reggie Bush and these type of great backs. you can line up, and first of all, you'd have to go out and get yourself running backs. I mean, some guys that can run the football, guys that are, you know, the Heisman Trophy caliber type of running backs that pound you to death, that don't want to come out of the game, that never get hurt, that play hurt, and carry the ball 28 times a game. Look at a kid at Michigan State or these other kids. I don't have to tell you who they are. You got to get that type of guy, and don't be afraid to run the toss, the sweep, and run to the outside, and be able to have the 1-2 punch with the big back and run two backs at times. You run two backs with Lindell and Reggie. That quarterback situation with the quarterbacks they have right now could run that offense easily, just easily. They got great receivers, and what you need to do is get your offensive line toughened up. Maybe have them eat a lot of nails during the summertime and put them in the training table with tacks and nails and eat those type of things so that they can get a little bit tougher and forget the ice cream and all of that and become men and get off the line of scrimmage and blow somebody off and hit somebody in the mouth. And with this type of philosophy, and if you can do that with the right offensive line coach and the right head coach with the right plays, you know, and beef up the defense where you could stop somebody. But again, if you control the football on the offensive side of the ball, that's the best defense you can have. So I think a guy can turn it around, because I think right now the Pac-12 is sort of wishy-washy. Who's great in the Pac-12 right now? Oregon's winning, but they're not blowing out anybody. I mean, Stanford, they're not very good. Cal's not very good. Washington State, it's a power of the league, Washington State. 5-4. So, you know, Oregon State, they've been getting beat. Colorado, they're nobody to fear. Arizona's nobody to fear. Arizona State got it going on a little bit. But you can play with them. And I think a guy can get it going, because you get the right coach there, you can get the right players there. And you can put the right players in the right position there with the right type of philosophy there, and you might have a chance.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Coach. I think you can turn this around quicker than people think. Some people are just kind of being pessimistic for good reason. They're just like, oh, this team's so terrible, it's going to take a miracle to turn it around. That's what's good about this program is there's still talent there. A new coach comes in, changes everything, changes the culture, changes the philosophy, changes it all, brings in a winning attitude and culture and all of that, brings in players from the transfer portal most likely. If you get them early enough, brings in some better players from the recruiting class. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, wait, this team can win? The Pac-12's a mess. Like, you don't have to be great to win the Pac-12. That's why you can turn this around quickly. You just have to be competent. USC's we saw on Saturday night, Coach, two really incompetent teams that were performing way below the level of talent on each roster. And that's why I'm a little more optimistic that they can turn this around quicker. A great coach can come in there and do that.
Oh, yeah. I think it can. I tell you, that's why USC is a great job. Yeah, USC is a great job. That's why I'm saying whoever's hired better be the right coach. And this regents and trustees and the college president and all the administrators who make this decision have got to decide what it was like and what the people are looking forward to.
Okay, we got a few more. We'll try to knock through these quick. Ray in Pasadena says, I'm not sure I should write to you people. I should let a couple of days go by to cool down. And then he goes into all caps and he says, please tell Mike Bone to forfeit the remaining games. This is a disgrace. I know we have commitments and the players need the reps, but why practice? It doesn't look like it's making a difference. You people keep rehashing the same old crap. Coach Hyde has asked the same stupid questions every week. There's nothing new. A second-rate staff producing a second-rate team. I don't hear about the players having a team meeting, so I'll assume many of them will not be there next year. I'll stop before I start cursing and take a walk around the block. Ray in Pasadena. Ray, sorry, man.
Well, Ray, you gotta vent somewhere, so you can vent right here. Get it out so you can feel better about yourself, okay?
I'm going to ask guys this week, Coach, if they would do a players-only meeting at some point. I haven't heard about that. Maybe they did one and they just haven't told anyone. But usually we hear about those things if they happen, because someone's going to talk, because the players, you know, it's hard to keep everyone quiet. Do you think those help at all?
In certain situations, they do. They do when they need to happen. If you think it's worthwhile, these kids have been yelled at and told everything so many different times. I don't know. You've got too many different groups of people on USC's football team right now, who they look towards as far as the leaders. The captains don't play.
It's tough when the captains aren't playing, you know.
Yeah, and you got half the team from Texas. You know, you're not a team that started as freshmen that are going through with the tradition of what USC is and knows what it's all about. The kids from Texas, they don't know much about USC. They were recruited maybe, but they don't know about what it is or what it's about. I mean, why would they have left Texas? Think about it for a minute. Why would you leave Texas, one of the top football programs in the country? Why? Because they couldn't play there. Wasn't good enough to play there. I didn't like Steve Sarkisian. He makes it too tough on us. Or why do great players leave programs? Why? Now, I can see him from 1AA move up to have the opportunity. But why do people, why would SC take players from other people that are not trying to get rid of people, but why do you take people that can't play somewhere else, like the great kid, the poor kid that's from Alabama with that knee? I mean, why would you inherit an Alabama problem? Gives him another scholarship at Alabama. I mean, great kid. I want to wish him the best. I hope he comes back and beats everybody, and then you know what? But that's sad. Why would you do those things? Why don't you do your homework? I mean, those are the type of things that just fluster you when you consider USC is not a portal program. USC is a team that gets the best in high school, and they can stay there 4 years or 3 years and go to the pros. Not where you have to have immediate help because you don't have any players. How has it got to this? That's the main question. How has it got to this, and how they allowed it to get to this?
Yeah, it's where we are. College football, there's a lot of transfers going on, but there's always a risk when you do that, because there's a reason players leave. Sometimes it's coaches, sometimes players, sometimes combination. We got Alex wrote in, coach. Hiring a new, hungry, energetic coach on the rise, like a Dave Aranda of Baylor, or a seasoned, established coach like James Franklin. How could USC avoid the situation like Jim Harbaugh at Michigan or Chip Kelly of UCLA? Fight on from Alex.
Well, I don't know how you avoid it. You know, you go out and you try to find the best person, and you go out and you hope that person understands the great potential at USC and that you can win a national championship at USC quicker than you can win a national championship at where you are. And I think that's the main selling point as far as USC, as far as the location of USC, the tradition of USC, the national recognition of USC, the number of players. They've had more players, I think, in the pros than anybody else. They've had 83 first-round draft choices in the NFL. I mean, these things, the Heisman Trophy winners, hey, these things speak for themselves. And you got to be able to bring that back. You don't take the Heisman trophies on a golf cart on the practice field. And I don't know how many people have seen these, but these things I've seen, I say, hey, these things should be in the Huntington Library or the Huntington Museum. These are things that people played hard to win and to get national recognition for. And I don't know if you've seen that, but you know you've seen that type of demonstration with the Heisman Trophy and other things. What's going on? I mean, the part of the whole thing, the alumni of the football players, the whole thing of unifying needs to be done, a complete unification of the alumni football association, the Trojan clubs. The whole thing has got to be overhauled. And it's not just the head football coach's job. It's the university's job to bring back all of that and be the best in everything. So that people are jealous of USC and people hate USC. And as Mike Garrett said it best, they're all sick and jealous because they can't be a Trojan.
Yeah,
that's what it's got to be. And what happened to that?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what that didn't go over very well, I think, because of the sanctions following that. So, yeah, I don't know.
That's because they brought a lot of people in there as leadership that weren't willing to fight for the Trojan image.
Yeah. All right, we got a couple more. This is a little long from Earl and Torrance. He says, guys, how much money did USC save by firing Helton in September instead of last December after that embarrassing loss to Oregon? I haven't been back since the San Jose State game. I keep selling my season tickets and watch the embarrassment on television. The season was not even half over when we were beaten at home by Oregon State for the first time in 61 freaking years and lost at home by more than 40 points twice. And we barely beat Arizona at home on homecoming. Even worse, far too many people were there at homecoming to give Dr. Bartner, far too few people were there to give Dr. Bartner a send-off he deserved for homecoming. Mike Bone brought all these assistant coaches only to now pay them off at the end of the season, potentially replace them with higher-priced assistants and higher-priced head coach. If Helton had been fired in December, attendance today would be far greater if they started the season with a new head coach. The scattered crowd, empty seat Coliseum is not a good look for USC. Also, many fans wanted Helton gone long before this administration finally terminated him, which may have created a certain euphoria that the USC football nightmare was over. But to be fair, it did feel like a weight had been lifted from our collective shoulders. However, in the words of Lee Corso, not so fast. The stench of Clay Helton is going to linger for a while, and all we can do is grin and bear it while waiting for this nightmare season to end. Mike Bone, if you're listening, I'm becoming a Chargers fan. Earl and Torrance.
Well, you know, how many of you were at homecoming, or how many of you did actually see the halftime show at the Coliseum? Well, that's what USC football is about. That's what the USC halftime show is all about. That's what it is. It's not rock and roll music, okay? Or hip-hop, or point to the screen and see players doing different things. It's the tradition of Troy to have the best band. Like, they all wear sunglasses, but that's tradition of Troy. It's all of that type of stuff that the people are so proud of that need to be there. Those type of halftime, not just a salute to Art Barber, but a salute to Troy. The things they used to have, the event, salute to Troy. Ryan, you've been there. You've been at that event. And what it means to the alumni to be there and honor a team and have each coach talk and so on. The great events they've had, the recruiting night banquets. You've been there. I've been there. All of these traditional things have got to be reestablished. And reestablished in a way where people want to be at them, where you can't get a ticket. Dan Angeloff put that together, the banquet for the recruiting banquet. And you couldn't get a ticket to that. Normally, you had to be a guest of somebody who bought a table. This is what popped the popularity of Trojan football and Trojan athletics is all about. You used to be able to send out a letter saying, we need this. And within 15 minutes, you got that. Right now, everyone hesitates as far as, now I'm going to wait and see what's happening or never again. That's exactly right. That's the answers you hear. Because people are getting a little bit fed up on everything at USC. It's not just football. It's everything. So unless you put a stop to a lot of these things in a hurry, you're gonna lose a lot of people. But the new people, the new students coming in have never seen it or don't understand what it's all about. The tradition, the tailgating, the halftime shows, all of the things that were big time, man, big time. And that's why people are upset.
Yeah, they definitely are upset. And the passion is there, which is good for the athletic department because you know people still care. And that's important. If you can bring back a winner, people will be ready there for it. One last one. David wrote in, love the weekly podcast you do with Coach. Keep up the good work. Thank you and your team for keeping many of us USC fans on the latest on the football program. My question regarding the coaching search, do you know if Mike Bone is considering Matt Rhule as a potential candidate? I think this would be a great hire. He's proven to develop players and creating a winning culture, something USC has been lacking. What are your thoughts? Thank you, fight on, David. What do you think about Matt Rhule, Coach?
Matt Rhule was a great coach, did a great job. Would he consider him? I don't know. I really don't know who he's considering because I don't discuss it with him and I don't know him personally. So I don't know what he thinks is a threat to the athletic department or who's bringing baggage to the athletic department, or I don't know what his philosophy of hiring is or what the university's philosophy has been as far as telling them who to hire. So it's absolutely a mystery to me on who they might hire because they haven't definitely said. I've never heard of somebody say yet, football is important here. We want to play for national championships here. We're going to have that happen, and we're going to go hold that. We're not going to hold back on who we go after. We're going to get whoever we want. Now, that would sound pretty good, wouldn't it? But I don't hear any of that talk. I don't hear any of that type of talk. So unless I start hearing that type of talk, I have a question mark of what's going on.
Yeah. Matt Rhule, by the way, the Carolina Panthers head coach, did a great job. It was nice that he was a good I like him just because he's a good college coach, but it's tough. When you become an NFL head coach, you know, that's the pinnacle of the sport, right, for a lot of people. Now, you get a Nick Saban who's amazing in college, and it's just more of a fit for him. You know, we'll see. Rhule seems like he's enjoying the NFL. Would he want to come back to college? You know, if he – that would be one of the things it would be, Coach, if he just wanted to come back to college. Then USC would be a great fit. But it's going to be more about what does Matt Rhule want than USC. Now, obviously, USC would need to want him to bring him back. But the barrier there would be more about you're trying to get an NFL head coach. Is he someone that just happens to want to go back to college? You know, like if Mike Tomlin, very clear, he doesn't want to go to coach college. They're like, no, he's not doing that. I don't care if it's Alabama, USC, whatever. He doesn't give a crap. Rhule, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that's what he would want to do. But you'd have to find the right head coach. If he's having success, then he would want to go back to college. If it's a head coach in the NFL that's not having success and he has to find something else anyway, then he might consider it. But for Rhule, you would have to he would have to want to just come back to college. My opinion.
Well, yeah, well, I know exactly. You know, Pete Carroll was in the NFL, but Pete Carroll is a West Coast guy. Pete Carroll had a tremendous personality, good-looking guy. All the mothers wanted to meet him, and he got in every house because, first of all, it was Pete Carroll, and it was USC. And the first thing Pete Carroll did, he came from the NFL, is he brought himself coaches that knew Southern California that were great coaches, kids that knew the city. Dwayne Walker from John Muir High School, coach secondary. Kirby Wilson coached the running backs from Kirby was from Dorsey High School. Tom Davis, Ed Orgeron. I mean, he brought in people that were great coaches that knew what was going on in Southern California. And they introduced him to Southern California. I remember when he got here, I'm a member of the Optimist Club in Pasadena. I called Kirby and Dwayne up. I said, bring him over. Bring him over. We want to introduce him because in this club are all the Tournament of Roses people and so on. So bring him over. Hey, within 2 weeks, he came over with both of them. They introduced him to everybody. He spoke. He didn't mind doing it. The Pasadena Quarterback Club, he came there every year, spoke there. And by the way, the Pasadena Quarterback Club, we're having that November the 19th at the University Club in Pasadena. Go to PasadenaQuarterbacks.org, and we're going to do SCUCLA Day. So please come on over there. I'll be emceeing that event. 175, I think it's North Oakland in Pasadena, California. You can look that up. So he was everywhere, and he wasn't afraid to go everywhere, and he had people take him everywhere, and he loved to recruit. A lot of head coaches don't like to recruit. You got to learn to recruit. You got to love to recruit. I remember on the way home that Pete Carroll used to stop in South Central and go in liquor stores and talk to the kids and talk to people there and buy himself a Coke after the game and be everywhere. This is what you got to do as a head football coach. Be everywhere. Go out to dinner. Sign autographs. Kiss babies. I mean, this is what you need at USC. This is what you need when you have such a great school to sell. A lot of coaches don't have that type of school to sell. But at USC, you have something to sell. And I think that's what they got to look for, because that's what it takes to win. A guy that's smart, good looking, is aggressive, hires a great staff.
All right, Coach. Well, great stuff. Another hour in the books, and hopefully we can talk about some more fun stuff next week. We'll see. Maybe new head coach. I mean, a win over Cal. USC is actually a 1.5-point favorite on the road against Cal. So that line could move depending on what Cal player situation is. But yeah, maybe next week.
How would you bet that game, Brad?
Me? Mm-hmm. Depends. If Cal gets all their players back, I got burned this week, Coach. I was the only one on our staff to pick USC to cover the spread. And they were covering it the majority of the game, and then Arizona State scored that last touchdown, and I lost that one. I'd probably take Cal getting 1.5 on the road. I mean, at home, as long as like Garbers and most of the players play. If they like don't practice all week and they're like questionable to play, then I'd probably take USC. But I don't know. I mean, It's hard to see. The way USC's playing right now, like, you could argue that was the worst game of the season, even though the result wasn't worse than some of the other ones. I mean, they just look terrible. It's hard to pick them on anything. And this is a game you absolutely have to have if you want to be bowl eligible. And I don't know if they're going to be able to get it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to take USC in this game.
Okay.
Because if they can't beat this team, they better stay away from St. John Bosco. Okay? I'm going to tell you, if I'm 1.5 against a team that might not even practice and everything else, if you can't go up there, nothing against Cal, they've just got a lot of problems up there, okay, currently, as far as COVID and everything else. You've got to be able to go up there and say, my X is bigger than your O, and we're going to run one play or two plays, and if we can't beat you, we don't deserve to.
Yeah.
And I'd make the team walk home.
And the problem is, Coach, USC...
And the coaches, too, and make them crawl home.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember this past weekend, it's not like Arizona State was good. They got outscored 56-0 in the period of the last two games.
I know.
They were circling the drain like USC, and... Like you mentioned, the fourth quarter they got it right and beat USC. So,
like I said earlier, Ryan, at the start of the game, neither team wanted to win. I saw that neither team wanted to win.
Yeah.
No, they're just going through the emotions and this and that, and then all of a sudden, one team said, "Hey, this is more fun."
Yeah.
This is a lot more fun, and White went over 200 yards, and USC couldn't get 100 yards rushing.
No, and they...
So, you know, I mean...
This game is very important because, you know, UCLA, BYU... I mean, BYU hasn't lost in the Pac-12 yet. You want to get bowl eligible, you got to beat Colorado because I don't think you're going to sweep UCLA and BYU. I mean, you got to beat California. I don't think, you know, sweeping UCLA and BYU would be a really tough task. Although you don't think they should make a bowl anyway, but, you know...
Why would you want to go to a bowl game? Yeah. Give me one reason.
I mean, I think just the swag bag for the players. I think it's an opportunity for them, for the players.
It hurts the program to go to a bowl game.
Yeah. If the program, you sort of just want to, like, end the season and move on. It extends it.
Well, how does it help you to go to a bowl game and play a team in a minor bowl game? It's going to be a minor bowl game, and maybe get beat by a team that you shouldn't be getting beat by.
Yeah.
I mean, how's that help your program?
I think the Los Angeles...
If
they could go to the Los Angeles Bowl for the inaugural one, that'd be cool.
SoFi, yeah.
I mean, personally, I'd like to go. I've never been to SoFi Stadium. It'd be cool to go check that out. But, you know, the fact that they haven't won a bowl game since the 2016 season... You'd like these players to that are going to graduate or move on to have a bowl win on their resume, and they don't right now. So that might be why it's important.
Well, if they go to the SoFi Bowl, they're going to play the champion of the Mountain West Conference. Okay.
Yeah, probably.
So I don't know if that'd be good or bad.
Yeah. All right, Coach. Well,
as far as for the image of the program, you know what I'm talking about. That's a December 18th game, I think.
Yeah. We'll see. It doesn't look like that's going to be on the cards, but, you know, we'll see how they play this weekend against Cal.
And I'm for them winning all three games. Don't get me wrong. That's why I said that they got to beat Cal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got to start with that one.
But I'm just saying their program needs a new face as soon as it can.
Yeah.
And I'm saying it's time to make a change, make that change immediately, you know. The things that aren't good of, you change and move on, and you get excited about what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right, Coach. Well, good stuff. Great talking to you. And like I said, hopefully you have some better things to talk about next week. But follow him on Twitter at Coach Harvey Hyde or go to his website, harveyhyde.com.
Thank you, buddy.
And we will talk to you guys all next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
On May 23rd...
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what?
A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount+.